This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
SpaceX has launched its 40th mission of the year. That happened on Sunday. 51 Starlink satellites and space flights, Sherpa LTC, it's called, an orbital transfer vehicle left from Cape Canaveral, Florida, naturally. And again, 40 missions, that tells you something for the year. It's a record for the number of rockets launched in a calendar year. While Artemis, the attempt by NASA, of course, to go to the moon, that was scrubbed twice, and it's supposed to go off in September sometime later this month, or maybe even in October. That's going to absolutely be one to watch. There's a new prime minister in England, Liz Truss. She's promising some pretty bold moves for the UK, and she assumes this role in the mandate is going to be to tackle, of course, what else? What we talk about here in America as well, and that would be inflation. In the meantime, Tropical Storm Earl and Danielle are not a big concern for the people on the East Coast. That was one of the things that I was kind of worried about, frankly, in traveling to the East Coast. But the National Weather Service in San Juan, Puerto Rico, it's a much different situation for them. They're warning people that Earl could cause urban flooding and creeks to spill over their banks. They saw a little bit of that. The storm is expected to become a hurricane as early as Wednesday. So that whole thing that we talk about, the scenarios, the rapid rises on rivers and mudslides and areas of steep terrain are possible, of course. And we've seen this before in Puerto Rico. It's a nightmare. And it's supposed to hit its peak in intensity for about 4 to 5 days as a Cat 3 hurricane. But you know how that can often veer in a different direction. It's a really strange thing that happened on Sunday. The U.S. Coast Guard rescued a spear fisherman who was clinging to rocks in the Virgin Island in the water there amid this then tropical storm, Earl. They had 6-foot waves. Can you imagine? They actually had footage of this that they released. There was a man and a woman riding some kind of a watercraft on Sunday near the Puerto Rican southern town of Salinas. They died because they were struck by lightning. You know, this is one of my concerns when we're out on the water in Florida, because I'm unfamiliar with that, only knowing, listening for the thunder booms and trying to count what happens as far as how close, the seconds of how close the lightning is. Because lately we have seen some freak accidents. You know, it can happen, but we've seen some freak accidents on the water where people have been struck by lightning. This was a sad story in Canada. One of the two suspects in the Sunday mass stabbing in Saskatchewan was found dead on Monday. The second suspect is still at large. The guy's name is Miles Sanderson. They've put out all kinds of information about him. That stabbing left 10 people dead and 18 injured at a couple of different scenes in the indigenous community in that area and the surrounding areas in Saskatchewan. Some of the victims were targeted, while most were believed to have been just attacked randomly. Can you imagine? This is one of those where you shake your head and just say, oh, that's an awful, awful story. Not everything was awful on this Labor Day weekend. People got to see relatives. People got to go away. I'm, in fact, excited. I'm visiting with one of my BFFs in beautiful Buffalo, New York. Of course, it's not beautiful. I don't know if she did a wicked rain dance on me or what, but supposedly it's been nothing but sunny skies. And the second I arrived, it's rain. Do you think I packed a raincoat? Do you think I have an umbrella? The answer to that would be no, but it wasn't terrible downpours like some of what we seen, I talked about this in hour one, I mean, Kentucky over a month ago, what happened there, and then what we've seen in Mississippi and some other regions where massive walls of water, Dallas, Texas was hit, a lot of Texas was hit about a month ago, too, where it was so much water that rushed in such a short amount of time, people were dealing with flooding in downtown Texas and some of those underpasses and whatnot. So I think Labor Day for many was absolutely a day, hopefully not to be laboring, where you had a chance to, you know, kind of catch your breath, because this is the start of fall. We're getting closer to the fall season. Sadly, in going to a grocery store and in a box store just even the other day, already we've got so much of the Halloween candy that's already out, and probably even worse, I was in, I want to say it was Lowe's maybe a week or two ago, and they already had Christmas that was out. I mean, can we please get through Thanksgiving, and I guess before that, obviously Halloween, before we have to dip into what's going to be in your stocking. That's just too early for me. You know, it's been also an interesting weekend in the world of sports. We don't have a man cave for this special Labor Day show, but this week we'll be talking a lot about college football and the start of the NFL. The Thursday night game is really tough to predict. Is it going to be Buffalo on the road over the Rams, or will the Rams, who won the Super Bowl last year, prevail? But they get to kick things off, which is pretty exciting. I say this, I feel like, every year, but it is so hard to believe that here we are on the doorstep of yet another season in the NFL. Speaking of hard to believe, I've had the opportunity to talk to this guy once, and I just saw him last year in Palm Springs at Indian Wells, but I'll tell you what, Rafa Nadal is out of the U.S. Open. 22 match win streak is cut short by a guy who just has an incredible work ethic, amazing ground strokes, and is maybe on the road to winning the whole thing. So how did Nadal go down? 6-4, 4-6, 6-4, 6-3 in the fourth round to Tiafoe. Francis Tiafoe had his number. He's seeded 22 at Flushing Meadows, and he just buried his head in his hands and cried on the court after he shook hands with the number two seed, Nadal. So Nadal is out. He moves on. He is actually, I'm going to say it right now, my pick to win the whole thing on the men's side. We'll see what happens. Stay with us. I'll meet you on the flip side. Completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pouty Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
Joins us. His book is called Adam and Eve, The Rest of the Story, Secrets from the Ancient Wisdom of the Jews. We had such a good conversation off the air, I jotted down some notes and actually passed his book on to a couple of people because there's just so much you don't know about the history and the implications. So, Rabbi, thanks so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
Let's talk about, first of all, your path to writing this book. Why'd you write the book?
As we had spoken, it started actually as a teenager when listening to a lecture from my father, who was a rabbi until he passed away. He was speaking about the Old Testament, specifically one of the stories, Joseph and his brothers, and I was so fascinated by the approach. It wasn't the classic, you know, childhood story or the things you hear otherwise. It was with insights, it was with personality, it was an analysis of the status of their family situation and how it worked into the politics of the time. I was just blown away. And it started with that. And from there on in, I just kept on looking at the Old Testament as not just a set of, you know, fables or stories. I mean, from an Orthodox perspective, we take it as truth and we believe the stories. But all of a sudden, I'm seeing them as human, as real. And as I got older and a little more sophisticated and got a lot of training in psychology, etc., things just became clearer and clearer to me about the stories. And that was my first entree into this work, you know, this adventure, actually, of how to look at the Old Testament.
And, you know, it's interesting in looking at the Old Testament, too, and listening to the story about your father and listening to how it comes to life. I mean, is that what made you decide, I'm going to become a rabbi because you were so raptured by all of these stories, etc.?
Very interesting. Not really, because I, at least from one side of my family, am a 12th generation rabbi. So it was almost an expectation that we would all end up as rabbis, not necessarily working in community or in a synagogue or in any aspect as a rabbi. It was seen really as an advanced degree of personal growth and within the religious and the study of the Torah and et cetera and all of its attendant commentaries, et cetera. And there was an expectation, an unspoken expectation, that all the boys would receive ordination. And they did.
I love it. You know, in talking about the Old Testament, what do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions and what people don't know? Because you look at what the title of your book is, Secrets from the Ancient Wisdom of the Jews.
Right. There's a fundamental principle in Judaism that, and I'll say it in Hebrew and I'll translate it for you. Ein tzadik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov v'lo yechta. There is no righteous man ever who only did good and never sinned. Sin is fundamental to the human condition. And however we interpret sin, but let's just say not doing as God wishes, right? Not doing what's always good, you know, whether it's in thought, whether it's in action, you know, whether it's in intent. The fact is that we're not perfect. And it's that imperfection which actually makes the Torah, the Old Testament, so much more real. If you approach it as if these people were, you know, legends and they could do no wrong, then we miss out on 95% of the lesson of how great they really were. Mm. Because despite the shortcomings, despite the real human condition in which they existed, they rose to extraordinary spiritual heights and heroic heights in terms of their actions and what they did to our world. And I mean collectively, not just for the Jewish world. I mean, these were forefathers of most of the world in many ways, especially starting with Adam and Eve. So that's the real secret. The secret is that the Torah talks about real people.
And what don't we know about Adam and Eve, do you think?
Well, we never really knew what motivated them to sin. I mean, think about this, right? And let's take it all at face value. You're a creation of God. There's only two of you. There's Adam and there's Eve. You actually have a personal relationship with this entity that we refer to as God, this mysterious, unknown, spiritual entity that we attribute everything to. And he says, just don't do one thing. Don't eat from the forbidden fruit. Whatever that fruit was, let's call it an apple because it really has a good picture. When it's an apple, we all can feel the crisp crunch of that apple when it's delicious, right? And they nevertheless, even though they had everything they could have asked for in the physical world, nothing else was restricted to them. They were driven to eat from that forbidden fruit. Why? For me, that was my biggest question about Adam and Eve. It wasn't who was their tailor, who made their clothes. It wasn't what did they do in their spare time. I mean, that came along with it also, by the way, as you begin exploring. All those questions pop up also because they're real people, right? I mean, the next stage, which is something I'm working on at the moment, is, and from there on, you get to Cain and Abel. That's the next story. So what happened over there? That gets even more maybe involved and more real for our world, especially given what's going on today politically in the world, internationally. But these are real people. How did you make such a serious mistake that literally altered the future of humanity, at least the way Judaism, Christianity, and Islam look at it? I mean, they all attribute this failing on the part of Adam and Eve, the first two humans, who knew God on a level that none, or experienced God on a level that we never experience him, on a one-to-one basis, and yet they couldn't listen to the one commandment, don't eat from that fruit. That must have been one heck of a fruit. It was the one thing they shouldn't do, and they did it. So that tells us that that's inherent in the human condition. We just don't listen.
Yeah, no kidding. You can get the book, of course, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Adam and Eve, The Rest of the Story, Secrets from the Ancient Wisdom of the Jews. For you, what was the biggest surprise in putting this together and trying to put it into a book form and making it make sense so that people want to read it and learn from your wisdom?
I appreciate the question. I think for me, as I began writing it, I actually was able to answer my question. I was able to answer the question of what would have motivated Adam and Eve to do just that, to not listen to God. And the simple answer, believe it or not, was they actually thought that when God said no, he really meant yes, which we so often do, especially in human relations. No, don't buy me that thing. No, I really don't want it. Right? Really? Oh, I think you do really want it. And you're just not wanting to be, you don't want to be dependent. You don't want to tell me. You don't want to be vulnerable. So I know what you really want. And then you go out and you buy it. And it's what he or she did not want. It's, you know, just trust him. If God says don't do it, he merely means it. No means no. Yes means yes. God doesn't play that game that we play with each other all the time. I think that was my biggest takeaway from as I developed, you know, as I went through it slowly, looking at the information that the Old Testament provides, which is very limited. As I mentioned to you, the real question that I had when I started, I mean, I didn't really share the specific question, was how the heck did we blow it in four sentences? I mean, the entire episode of Adam, Eve, and the serpent, whatever he or she was, that serpent, that thing was, right? All of a sudden, failure. Humanity fails in the course of four verses in the Old Testament, six verses in the Old Testament. How is that possible? There's got to be more to the story. And that's why I went looking, and I sort of developed what I felt would be the progression from no, to he really wants to challenge us to see how much we love him. And if we really love him, We won't even listen to him, because in the end, we'll understand him better. So to understand him better is the goal. So when he says no, he really says, okay, how much do you really want to understand me? You should be willing to take a chance. Guess
wow.
what? He really meant no.
Yeah,
he didn't want you to take
no.
a chance.
He really meant no. I love this. We have like 30 seconds left. What do you hope
yes.
people take away from reading this book? And I think you said it throughout this conversation.
Yeah. I hope even more than that. I believe that. I really hope that people walk away and say, you know something? There's something fundamental here that shows a shared beginning for all of us, whether you're Christian, Jewish, Islam, Muslim, whatever walk of life, that there's something that's so fundamental to each of us and real to each of us that brings us together as a single entity. And that maybe we should look at that and think more about what makes us the same than what makes us different.
Perfect place to end this. Rabbi, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News.
Nearly one in four Democratic voters believe men can get pregnant. According to a new poll, the online survey conducted by WPA Intelligence found 22% of Democrats agreed with the statement, quote, some men can get pregnant, unquote. The percentage rose when only including women, and a whopping 36% of white college-educated female Democrats concurred. A Christian teacher in Ireland who refused to use a transgender student's preferred pronouns has been jailed for ignoring a court order that prohibited him from setting foot on the school's campus. According to Newsweek, Enoch Burke was arrested Monday morning and sent to prison for contempt of court. He told the court, quote, I will not give up my Christian beliefs. A settlement in an e-cigarette lawsuit has...
Mike Lindell and MyPillow offering the BOGO extravaganza right now on a whole slew of MyPillow products. Now you can find all sorts of great deals on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillow, six-piece towel sets, roll and go anywhere pillows, much more, all priced buy one, get one free. Go to MyPillow.com/USA, use promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8255. 800-273-8175 and find you some great MyPillow products. They're all available. Oh, by the way, you can also get Mike's book absolutely free with any purchase, but you have to go to MyPillow.com/USA or call 1-800-951-8175 and make sure you use the promo code, the Buy One, Get One Extravaganza, going on right now at MyPillow.com.
I can't tell you how excited I am to introduce you to this next woman who is incredibly energetic, incredibly talented, and I think has unpacked something that is phenomenal. Boy, she has written a ton of books, and we're going to focus on the power of why. Why 23 musicians crafted a course and why you should too. The power of why 25 musicians composed a legacy. I love that. And why you should too. The power of why 21 musicians created a program and why you should too. So without further ado, Glory St. Germain joins us now. You are a powerhouse. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much, Kate. I am so excited to be here and so inspired by your books as well. So thank you for sharing your books with the world, because we really are here to learn from each other. And I'm so blessed to be surrounded with musicians, and I'm really thrilled to be sharing the story with you today.
So let's talk about your journey. Where did you come from and how did you get to where you are now?
Well, I started teaching when I was 16 years old, and I was actually really frustrated and not very confident in my teaching. There was no resources to help me, so I decided to become resourceful. Wrote my own worksheets, and they became workbooks. All the publishers said, no thanks, so I became my own publisher, and now I've become an international best-selling author. I've written over 50 books, and I'm super excited about the power of why that we're sharing with you today.
And so let's talk about that. I love how you broke it down, because you talk about creating a program. You talk about composing a legacy. Ooh, that really stuck out to me. And just in the beginning, creating a course. And it made me think, I have so many friends who are musicians who need these books because they can do it and you're giving them the roadmap. So tell us about the books and what was it that got your mind churning about that and being very specific about it?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Kate. I think specifically because I struggled with so many things, and now more than ever, I think we need to share that. And often there's imposter syndrome. You don't feel good enough. You just want to escape, more than ever now. And I thought, why are we just learning about the old musicians 100 years ago? Let's talk about the musicians today. They have struggles. And when you read this book, if you ever aspired to be a musician or share your music with the world, wow, it's going to inspire you. And there's really, I think one of the cool things about this book is that the book series is that you're not just able to read these stories, about people from Indonesia, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, around the globe, struggling with everything from dyslexia to imposter syndrome to physical issues, physical abuse. The thing is, you can connect with them because each story is from a different author. It's an anthology from around the world. And you also get to connect with them because all of their contact information is at the end of every chapter. So no more excuses for not being able to do what you want to do. Just jump in there and do it.
And, the stories are so fascinating. Give us one of the stories that really, I'm sure they all resonate with you, but give us one that really stuck with you.
You know, one of them that really stuck with me was a young girl who found out that she was adopted at the age of 14 years old and just out of the blue in gym class. It devastated her. She ran away from home. The police had to go looking for her. They found her 4 days later, and they brought her back home. And she said the only thing that saved her was her music. she would go to the piano and she would just play, just tears streaming down her face, just sobbing because there was no one. She didn't know who she was or how she could find her identity. And she said, if it wasn't for music, she said she probably would have committed suicide. She said she was just beyond, like she had nothing, no hope. And I think it just made me realize, like sometimes you think, oh, isn't that nice? Someone wrote a little song for a birthday party. But these stories go deep. And when I look at them, and even an orphan, from Indonesia, who now is like a concert pianist, like how does that happen? You know, someone surviving the Holocaust and then they become a concert, you know, a composer. Like these stories are so powerful and they resonate with me. And it's really the power of this that actually brought me to meet my husband as well. So you just never know.
Well, you can't just leave us hanging because your husband has quite a story. Tell us about your husband.
Well, actually, I met my husband the first time I heard him singing a song. I wrote about it in the book, actually. And I was on stage in the Miss Manitoba pageant. I was one of the 10 finalists. And I was modeling in the fashion show. And I heard this guy singing. And I'm like, oh, my God, I fell in love with his voice. And he came out. He was the host of the show. And I felt like he was singing to me, as all the entertainers do. And he invited me out for pizza. And I said yes. And the next thing you know, we're married with 5 kids. And... So the story goes on, but I think it was just, and he is, I mean, he's Canadian Country Music Hall of Fame, recording artist, singer-songwriter. Music runs in our family. Our son-in-law, Mike Reno, is the lead singer from Loverboy, you know, working for The Weeknd and all that. So our daughter Sherry's a producer in Las Vegas. You know, they've all come through, they've grown up with music, and I was just honored to share that legacy with our kids.
Boy, no kidding. I mean, just fascinating. It'd be so fun to be at your dinner table when everybody comes. I can imagine the stories,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Great. You know, it's interesting you said that, Kate. We always have a Christmas Eve jam, and it is the place to be on Christmas Eve is the St. Germain's, because musicians, I mean, they just know it's not even invite. They just all show up. And it is that musical connection that, you know, my husband used to always tell our kids, always play with people that are better than you, you know, rise up to that occasion. And the reason that I wrote this series was to inspire musicians to say, you don't have to do it by yourself. Like, just pick up the book and go, wow, if they can do it with all of this that's happened in their life, I can do it. So it's there for you. It has a profound effect on all of us. Really, it's, you know, what we do.
Where do you go from here with this series? Because, I mean, it really does pull you in. Actually, it pulls you in whether you're a musician or not, because I think the stories are so powerful that you can apply them to your life, even if you're not, quote, a musician.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Kate. I think it's the Power of Why series is a series of, you know, inspirational stories that help you know that you can too, whatever that means for you. And I certainly invite fellow musicians to go to powmusicians.com. So POW musicians.com. You will see the stories there in the 3 books, and you will also have an opportunity to submit a chapter to our next books coming up, which is the Power of Why 27 Musicians Captured the Lead. And the final book in the series is The Power of Why 29 Musicians Climbed to Superstar. So you can go there and check it out. And we look forward to receiving your application. And you just never know where it might lead you to.
Boy, there you go. Making dreams come true. So for you, actually doing this and starting off and having this idea and now seeing where it's gone, what's that like? I mean, what was it like when you physically, you know, you had doors slammed, so you start it yourself. You see the power of that and how they sell and the interest. What's it like for you when you, like, got the first one and you got to hold it in your hand?
You know what? It was so exciting for me. And I know you know that feeling. It's just like, can I just hold it? And you just want to share it with everyone, and you buy 100 copies and just give them to all of your friends and relatives and go, read this, read this. I think there is so much gratitude in creating anything, whether you're creating a piece of music, whether you're creating, you know, a performance, whether you're writing a book. I think the creation is so exhilarating. And I can tell you, and of course you and I have met connect, you know, globally now with all of the power of Y musicians. And you can see the interviews. You can actually get to meet them when you go to the powmusicians.com. And from all over the world, and it is a time where we need to support each other. You know, there is a very powerful healing power in music. If you're feeling depressed, sometimes, you know, just putting on a little tune is going to kind of perk you up, make you feel a little better. And I think when you read these stories, I'm going to tell you now, you're going to cry. There is some very powerful stories in there that will move you to tears. Can I share one quick one with you?
Yes, yes.
So there was a mother, and you'll read the story. And she had a young daughter who was always devastated. I'll try not to cry while I'm telling the story. And she was devastated because her daughter was so upset because her little gerbil died. And so she took her young daughter to the piano and she said, let's compose a piece. And so they composed this little piece together. Her daughter was only 8 years old at the time. And they wrote this little piece together. And it made her daughter feel better. And she was filled with joy and she was so happy. She said, Mommy, thank you. You've made me feel better. And 4 years later, her daughter passed away.
Oh.
And she said that as she was kind of going through some things and she was writing her chapter in the book, and she said she came across the original manuscript that she wrote with her daughter. And she said her daughter just called it the hamster, which of course was spelt wrong because she didn't know how to spell the word. But she said, through that experience, it gave her strength to continue composing, to sharing her legacy with the world. And it's powerful. And sometimes those little moments that you don't even realize at the time will move you forever. And they help others. And I think that's why I do what I do. It's not about me. It's about you. You know, dream big. What do you want to do? Leave the world a better place than when you got here. Like, do something. Show up, you know, and just take that one step. And the universe will come so much closer and just deliver everything to you. It's just like a little buffet. So,
wow. Perfect place to end this. The Power of Why series is just amazing. Where you've mentioned the website a couple of times, but let's do it again. Where can people go to get any of these books?
Absolutely. Go to powmusicians.com. All the links are there. You can apply. Reach out to us. We're here for you. And don't forget to connect. Once you read the book, connect with those composers and authors and musicians. I know they'd love to hear from you.
I love it. Glory St. Germain. I think you're going to be a fixture on this show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Kate. I loved it.
Guys, why settle for poor quality Powdy Arco that's sold by stores and online resellers when you can get Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea at drinksupertea.com or 818-965-9113. The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea is only available at drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
To a place, the south coast of England, picture near the Isle of Wight. Oof, sounds really exciting to me, that's for sure. Guy Evans is in that spot, and he's written a book called The Lost Chronicles of East London, The Streets of Darkness. Guy, thanks so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
So I got to ask you this first, though, because, you know, there's people listening all over the world, especially in America, but in Australia, New Zealand, Brazil, and we have images of Isle of Wight. What's Isle of Wight like? Because you're near there.
The Isle of Wight is a sort of 1950s throwback. If you've ever been there, it's like going into time warp. You sort of cross the Solent, and you can sort of feel a charge go through your body, and you revert back to being into the 1950s. They even have, for their train sort of system, they have the old underground trains from London from the 1960s and 70s still running. So that's what the Isle of Wight is like. My son actually goes to school on the Isle of Wight. He gets the hovercraft over every morning. So he gets to actually sail across to the Isle of Wight every day for school.
Wow. How interesting is that? And it's funny, we were talking up there and you were in London and you talked about loving London. Right. So it's, I think, no surprise that you write about London and you've got this character we're going to talk about, Joe Druitt. But before we get there, what led you to becoming a novelist? What made you want to write?
I've always liked writing ever since I was little. I've liked writing stories. I think when I was growing up in the 1980s, I think it was the real start of children's television and the explosion of cartoons. I'm a huge fan of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe and Thundercats and Transformers. And it's all those colourful characters. And I especially love the artwork. I actually collect the artwork from the He-Man cartoon. So I've got the cells for the backgrounds and some of the actual movement images for the cells as well. That sort of made me think, yeah, I really like writing, being able to tell stories. And I was a teacher for over 20 years, and I was head of English and drama. So I would write stories for children, and I would write plays for children. Because I think a lot of children, when they are performing, feel very shy or very nervous or left out of what they do. And to include every single child in a year group when you've got 100 children, so they've all got something to say or something to do or something to dance to, is very important. It makes them all feel involved. And the character of Joe Druitt doesn't feel involved at the beginning of the book. He feels useless because he can't read. And it's the idea that, all right, you might not be able to do something, but you can all do everything when you really put your mind to it. And when you have the support of friends and your family. At the beginning, he doesn't really have that until the end, when his mum especially realizes just how special he actually is.
So now we come to the book, and tell us the story. Tell us the character Joe Druitt, what happens in the, not everything, because we want people to get the book, but The Lost Chronicles of East London, The Streets of Darkness. Tell us about that.
Well, Joe is born in Whitechapel, which is an area of East London which is notorious for the Jack the Ripper murders, which happened in the 1870s. And although he's aware that this is what happened over 100 years ago. He doesn't really think about it now, mostly because he can't read, so he's not got a real understanding of it, and he refuses to try and learn to read because he just thinks other people will laugh at him. He has a sort of vision where he experiences a street in East London, a special street called Dorset Street, as it was over 100 years ago. It's now a car park, and Dorset Street, 100 or so years ago, was called the worst street in London. And ironically, the car park in Dorset Street is now the worst car park in London. And he experiences these images of the past, and he can see the rats and the rubbish and the fact that the dirt is all piled up on the streets. And he knows that something isn't quite right. And he begins to learn that actually Jack the Ripper may not be exactly who we think Jack the Ripper is, especially along the sort of, is he a human side? And he goes back in time with two friends to try and actually work out who or what Jack the Ripper is before whatever he is comes into our reality and into the 21st century.
Yeah, so when people read The Lost Chronicles of East London, The Streets of Darkness, which you can get on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever great books are sold, Guy, what do you hope people take away from reading your novel?
I'd like them to see that children are not necessarily the way that they're perceived to be. I think everybody's got this idea that children are not in the same league as an adult. I think intellectually, and having taught with children for so long, if the children aren't on board with you as a teacher or with as a person, then they'll fight back. Children can be absolutely terrifying. I remember I had a year six class, so that's 11-year-olds, and I went on paternity leave for 2 weeks. And I loved that class. They were great. I thought they were amazing. Well, the first supply teacher lasted till playtime with them. So that shows you what they thought of her. The second supply teacher lasted for a day. And the third supply teacher hung on for grim death for the rest of 2 weeks. When I got back, they had done absolutely nothing. Because children are just as clever, if not cleverer, than adults. And I think you underestimate a child at your peril. So that it's just that children should be treated, and hopefully I've written them in that light as well, in the same way as an adult. They're just as good as us, if not better.
I like that, if not better. I agree. Hear, hear.
Yes.
So we're not done after this with Joe Drew. We're continuing on. Tell us about what's coming up. Give us a kind of a sneak peek of that.
Well, Joe and his friends realize that it might not just be Jack the Ripper from the past or from that area of London who wants to try and take over the world or the universe. I like a villain who wants to think big. That idea of the world is not enough, that's almost a Bond thing, isn't it, now that the new Bond film's out. They realise that Cleopatra's Needle, which I don't know if any of you have been to London, sits on the embankment, is not exactly from ancient Egypt. It's older than that. It's far older. And whoever is underneath Cleopatra's Needle don't just want to stay underneath Cleopatra's Needle. But there is a running thread that runs through all the books. If there's a character who is going to use the children to try and get ultimate power in the universe, and he needs to be able to get them on board with him first before he starts to attempt that.
Nice. And I have a feeling that this is going to continue on and on. Is it fun for you to write? Is it fun for you to create this?
It is. And actually, when I was doing the second book, which is called The Sirens of Galleon's Reach, which is an area in East London, it's where the Princess Alice, which was a paddle steamer, sunk at the end of the 18th century. On the same day, actually, that Cleopatra's Needle came into London, I actually enjoyed, in a way, writing the second book more than the first, because although the first one is the baby, it's just the emergence of the characters. And by the second book, you know them better, so it's easier to write the interaction between them. And the fact that Edo thinks he's marvellous and wonderful and intelligent, and Joe comes in with the put-downs, and Flo, who's the goth girl of the series, she sort of like gets in between them, and she's sort of the peacemaker.
Yeah, and for you in doing this, I was thinking, boy, you have a lot to draw from because of the children that you've taught, being involved with drama. So you would know, but probably pieces of these characters are pieces of people that you've met, I would imagine.
They are, yes. Joe is actually based on two boys that I know very well. One of them ironically called Joe and another one called Taylor. And it's the fact that sometimes boys will be boys and they would say things that you think, oh, didn't know you were going to come out with that, or didn't know you were going to say that. And I taught these boys when they were 10. They're now 26, 27, and I'm still in touch with them now. So they'll be fascinated that I'm doing this and talking about them on American radio. So one of them is actually, he's an Xboxer now, I think, Taylor. So, and they're all doing very well for themselves, which is lovely to see. When you send a child away after however long you've got them for, you always wonder, well, what they're going to do, what's going to become of them. And keeping in touch with so many of them, it's great to see they've all got children now of their own, which makes me feel very old, and families and jobs and careers, which is brilliant to see.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's got to be the rewarding part of watching. Definitely. What happens when you see these boys become men, and then what they turn into, because of how there's so much criticism, or you should do this, or you should do that, and then they turn out wonderful. And it's to your point of what you said about children, that maybe they're smarter than us sometimes.
Definitely. I do think children have a different view of the world, and it's probably a better view of the world than us adults have, especially at the moment. I do think children have responded to the pandemic a whole lot better than we have. I think it's something to do with their psyche, that they're just like, okay, this is happening, we'll go with it. Whereas having seen the panic in the adults around the world, I think children have got it just right, really.
Yeah, I do too. Well, you got it just right with this book, The Lost Chronicles of East London, The Streets of Darkness. Guy Evans, thanks for coming on.
That's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Those well-meaning friends who tell you what you ought to be doing with your life. I'm Kate Delaney. I have them. Occasionally I listened and I found myself stuck in dead-end jobs, relationships, and a life I absolutely did not recognize. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, I promise you, once you finish it, you won't let people tell you what to do anymore. Learn how to make bold moves that change the course of your destiny. The book is filled with stories that will make you laugh out loud and lessons you can apply right away. If you go to my website, KateDelaneyRadio.com, I have a steal of a deal. Check this out. Just $29.99 for both of my hard copy books. Deal Your Own Destiny, which I just talked about, and my girlfriend's gratitude journal. Perfect gift for girlfriends, wives, or any woman in your life. Again, both books, just $29.99. Click on special offer at KateDelaneyRadio.com.
Thank you. and independent talk radio.